here, so.
I have a quick question. Is there a notice posted outside the door? This is actually kind of a newbie question because I'm still grappling with no longer being exempt from the open meeting law. And I noticed that.
Showing direction?
Yeah, I noticed that Noreen Clark was downstairs. I passed her on my way in. She was talking on her cell phone in the entry foyer. Mm-hmm. Can she tell from the outside that we're here and she can come in?
Well, the meeting was posted and it's on the agenda, so. And this is where the room that it's always been in.
Okay, I don't know the answer. I'm just asking. So
I can always follow up with her to make sure that she didn't get redirected somehow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, may I ask a question? Can we start by getting some kind of update? Now, the last I had heard, we had one applicant and one that was on the fence, as it were, about releasing their name, and now we're going to questions. So I'm assuming that the person came off the fence?
Can we approve the agenda first?
They okay. Will, and we certainly will answer those questions.
Mr. Chair, if you're ready, I would move that we accept the agenda.
Second?
Or adopt the agenda, I think, technically.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And we have a second from Councilwoman Wood. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? And we've adopted the agenda. And we have passed public comment, so first item would be to approve the minutes from the March 12th meeting. If any others have had a chance to read, I have seen it. It looks like it is a proper reflection of what we discussed.
We'll accept the minutes from that meeting. Do we have two sets of meetings to accept? Two sets of minutes?
No.
We accepted the last set at the last meeting?
Yes.
Anybody wishing to second to
the second, sorry.
Any more discussion? All in favor of the minutes being approved, say aye.
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 Any opposed? None are opposed. And on we go. So maybe at this point I would like to turn it over to Pam Derby and discuss the question that Councilwoman Wood brought up as to state of affairs of applicants.
Good afternoon. Well, things have changed somewhat in the last couple of weeks since I spoke with all of you in that there are two other applicants who have an interest in the position, one of whom could step into the position with no hesitation as far as being licensed. Well, two of them, are both licensed in Nevada. One I consider a much more viable candidate. The previous candidate that we talked about who was on the fence because of the public notification and one of the two new candidates, both of whom I have interviewed, I consider highly qualified. How either neither of them would be comfortable having their names become public prior to being announced as the appointee to the position. They feel that it would endanger their current positions if it became public that they had applied. And obviously, because an interview process is them interviewing you as well as you interviewing them and determining whether there would be a fit, neither one of them would be comfortable participating if it was not, they were not able to do that in a closed session type of situation. And so I believe that you have four candidates that you can interview. And I, as I said, I think two of them are highly qualified. But if it can't be if it has to be an open session, they're not willing to come into the pool.
The position of the chief health officer is statutorily created. The CHO is a public officer. Under the open meeting law, there is no exception. Unlike California, which has a specific exception, it's even called a personnel exemption, which allows them to do applicants in a closed session. We don't have that leeway in Nevada. There will be nothing precluding the board members, of course, from talking to the candidates. needed to make your decision, it would still have to be done in public. You still have to, because you wouldn't be able to do serial communications.
Right.
You wouldn't be able to go amongst yourself of who's going to vote for this way and who's going to vote for that way. So even if you interview the candidates individually, as which you can do, by the time you had to make the decision, it has to be a public discussion. The deliberation has to be public. The choice has to be public.
Could, and this is just sort of a weird concept, but could persons be interviewed without providing their name, as referring to them as candidate A, B, C, D, do that in public without giving their name? If that would even be of any comfort to anyone, I don't know.
You could do a like voice where we have to face the wrong way.
No, that's an interesting question.
We brought up the concept that, you know, we certainly don't even want a perception of something happening without proper public scrutiny. So, I mean, we should not try to create a smokescreen in any manner.
You know, let me call the AG and flush it out.
I find that a very provocative and interesting idea, and I think that could possibly work. We certainly deal with selection committees of, for instance, I'm doing a school superintendent right now that has community members and things, and we've redacted all of the information in the resumes for them to screen that would indicate where the candidates, who they are, where they came from. And we could certainly provide that type of situation in this instance.
I will call the Nevada AG after this meeting. He's always been very helpful in the past, and ask him. If we're not skirting.
Oh, okay, thank you.
I'm sorry, Attorney General. And see if that's still within allowable actions.
Anybody have any thoughts, positive or negative, about that?
I second Annette's motion. Oh, wait.
That
seems like a reasonable thing to do.
I have a question. For purposes of a quorum gathered to interview or to meet with potential candidates privately outside the open meeting law, because there is no quorum, is it a quorum of this subcommittee, or is it a quorum of the board?
Quorum of the board.
So we meeting together do not constitute the selection committee meeting together does not constitute a quorum of the board.
Right.
Who just joined us on the phone?
I just joined. This is Susan Crowley.
Hello, Susan.
Well, I guess, have we discussed the process to the extent of, is it going to be the full board that's doing the interview, or will it continue to be the selection committee?
I think what I heard from the board was when we got to doing final interview, we would get direction from the board as to how they would like to pursue that. That we would, as a selection committee, come up with the candidates that are recommended.
Okay.
And then the full board would tell us, essentially, or reorganize as to who would be the interview committee.
So, Annette, as I understand it, this is Pam. Mm-hmm. As I understand it, though, the selection committee is also under the open meeting law. So even if the selection committee was able to meet not being a quorum, wouldn't it still have to be noticed? So that the public could be present?
Right. Any meeting of this committee was appointed by the board, but for the board saying this is what I want you to do, it wouldn't exist. So anything that it does has to be in compliance with the open meeting law. When I was talking about talking to the candidates individually, that's
individually.
Totally individually in their own offices.
Right.
Okay. Or wherever the candidate may be.
Okay, so one, we need to put something on the agenda for an update to the board to get direction on how they want to do the interview process. The other is, Annette's going to find out, because I'm still trying to figure out, it's not so much the voice situation, it is that person wouldn't be able to walk in without probably everybody knowing who.
Correct.
Behind screen, I mean, you know.
Well, my concept, well, yeah. I don't know that having the person there is going to meet their needs for non-disclosure. What my intent of talking to the AG would be, this is, we would have the resume.
Right.
We would redact the pertinent information from that resume, so
right.
the substance was there. And that way you all would still be able to review it and determine, did you want to bring this person in?
Okay.
Ultimately, I don't know that you could ever really interview that person without it being public, because it has to be done publicly.
Well, and I would suggest that if we were able to redact the resumes so that the committee could look at them and then have teleconference interviews the first time around to give those candidates, you know, on both sides, give the committee a feeling and give the candidates a feeling of how they felt about things, that then they could make the decision about what if they wanted to move forward after that and become public. But that would be certainly be a way to keep their anonymity.
It would, unless some, and I'm taking this to an unnatural conclusion, but voice recognition. I know who this person is. I know he or she works here or there.
You recognize
the way they answered the questions, I know who they're talking about. And don't forget, we're a public entity, therefore we are required by law to respond to public record requests.
Right.
And I think that the style of questions that I would want to ask are, you know, tell us about your experience, what have you done, what kind of challenges have you overcome, and so that becomes site-specific and career-specific
right.
in a sense that
yeah.
it's hard to get into that without getting
well,
in the
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
So do we still want to move forward with my exploring this with the AG in terms of how we can structure this? Candidate 1, 2, 3, and redacting the resume.
I think I would recommend it. It's something we ought to consider to do.
And I would prefer that we resolve to repeal the open meeting law.
Well, or at least provide greater leeway. Particularly for situations like this.
How many lifetimes do you expect to
yes.
spend on that?
Yeah, I know. Barring that, I would prefer that we resolve to have the legislature subject to the open meeting law.
That would help.
Ooh. As soon as I talk to the AG, I'll send everybody an email.
And I think our recruiter needs to keep the candidate apprised. There really is no effective way to preserve their identity from us. It's in the nature of it. They're not
right, and I don't think that that's the piece that they're concerned about. They are more concerned. I mean, obviously, the members of the selection committee are not going to be doing stealth background checks or things of that nature, but I think they're more concerned about obviously employees who are not a part of the committee undertaking those types of activities, because that's the other thing that happens is when a candidate's identity is out there prior to appointment, and you have a situation where, you know, I'll be blunt, it's just the committee right now, that the union is supporting one candidate, I think it's fairly certain that they would start calling other candidates places of work and trying to dig up the dirt, as they say. And I've certainly seen it happen in other instances. And it's very disruptive for the candidate, it's very disruptive to the process.
And I would go on record as asking Jackie, when you create the minutes, try to generalize that statement.
Yeah.
Please.
Second.
My apologies.
Second. Sure.
But well taken, understood. Today? any rate, so that said, I think back to Anita's question, we would come back to the board, let them know that we have potentially two additional persons for a total of three that wish to not be publicly identified, and unless we can get through that hurdle. And,
is it three, Pam, or two?
It's two that don't want to be identified, and I would consider them to be the strongest candidates, actually.
So the one from previous discussion, is that person no longer in consideration?
Not if it's going to become public.
Is that one of the two? The person who...
So you had previously we had two. You had your internal candidate, as you know, that's who made it public themselves, and then you had the candidate from out of state who does not wish for his candidacy to be public.
Right.
Since that time, I have spoken to someone that I've been trying to bring into the pool and convinced them to come in, but again, he will only stay if it remains anonymous. And then you have a fourth candidate who is willing to be do this process in public. However, they do not have the same level of public health experience in a county or district situation that the other candidates have.
Pam, the one that's out of state.
Mm-hmm.
Let me rephrase it this way. Three of the candidates are Nevada licensed, and one is not.
Yes, and one is not.
And
Dr. Madaw has indicated that he wants to leave in August. Certainly from my discussions with him, you know, he's very interested in finding the candidate that you want and are comfortable with, and whether something could be worked out if you decided that the candidate from out of state was who you wanted to choose, and, you know, they would have the 3 to 4 months to get their Nevada license and do their application, then it wouldn't be an issue. So I think that's a matter of, would be a matter of working things out with Dr. Madaw as to when he decided to leave to give that individual the opportunity to become licensed in Nevada.
This is Annette again. One of the candidates who is licensed in Nevada, they don't have a problem becoming public?
That's your internal candidate.
Okay, so we've got an internal candidate. Everybody already knows him. We've got another candidate
right.
who's licensed in Nevada.
Yes. You have two candidates who are licensed in Nevada, one of whom would not have a problem with his candidacy being public, and the other that would.
Okay, so everybody else has a problem except the one who's already made themselves public.
No, there is one other candidate who has no problem, who's licensed in Nevada, is willing to be public, but as I said, they don't have the level of public health experience at either a county or district level that the other three candidates have.
I just wanted to make sure that the committee understood the delineation. We have one who is not Nevada licensed, which poses its own set of problems.
Exactly.
One who is Nevada licensed, but who will not come forward unless we can guarantee anonymity.
Correct.
And we have two who are Nevada licensed,
yes.
One internal, one external, and both are willing to do this publicly.
Yes, correct.
Well, I think, you know, and the other guidance I thought I understood from the last full board meeting was understood that we had one viable candidate at that point in time. And if that candidate was going to ultimately be the only choice for us, our mission was to go forward and start an interview process with that candidate and begin to see if that is a good fit for the circumstances and then make a decision. decision from there. So I think it was understood that at least we'd start an interview process. It may not be a competitive interview process at that point, but a fit for duty type interview process.
Well, I mean, I'm happy that we have four candidates now, and I mean, you know, that we actually have more than one candidate to interview and have a choice, and I think, you know, can vet that out, but certainly it's difficult when two of them don't want to be public in a what is a very public situation.
Right.
Pam, the additional notices that went out, did they go to all of the physician organizations? And I want to say there was one that Dr. Bedell mentioned. Was it Emory?
Yes. Yes. They went out to all three of those.
So one step that's going to occur now is for Annette to determine with the AG the feasibility of doing a whatever you would call it, no-name type of
job interview protecting the applicant's confidentiality and identity.
And yet still maintaining the open meeting.
Part B of that would be Pam.
While complying with the open meeting. Right.
Part B of that would be for Pam to see if the candidates that wish to remain anonymous at this point are willing to take a chance on that kind of a process.
Yeah. Just for full disclosure, I have had previous conversations with the AG's office on separate issues, and well, he's always been very forthcoming. He's adamant in terms of not wanting to skirt the open meeting law in any fashion. And so he's
come up with a new interpretation that reverses 10 years of the way we've done things.
I'm sorry, who's this that you were talking
that
to?
The
AG that deals with open meeting laws.
Okay. Oh, okay, that deals with open meeting laws.
Mm-hmm. So we could...
He does a lot of the training for the open meeting laws.
No, you just keep saying he, and I keep thinking...
I'm sorry.
No, AG's the trick, Catherine. Or his master, so you keep confusing me.
So that said, we could interview Dr. Coleman, and we could interview the other candidate that seemingly is not the same level of experience, and then begin to see what goes with the other two candidates in that regard. So that is a recommendation we could bring back to the full board.
I would move that we bring that recommendation back to the full board with a report that we're still dealing with two other candidates who want their identity protected, and we're attempting to determine if there's a way we can do that while being in compliance with the open meeting law.
We need a motion for that, or we would just make
that last one.
We'll call it a motion.
I just assumed it was and made it as a motion. So
I'll second that.
Any further discussion on that? All in favor, aye.
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 So that said, the other assignment I guess I had coming into this meeting was to prepare some questions that we might want to consider for the interview process, and so I've done that. These are your basic softball questions of get to know somebody rather than trying to drill into their expertise and knowledge of the profession. Kelly has any concept of this being reasonable, unreasonable for what we're doing. So at any rate, here's a pile of questions.
Kelly had a chance to read this.
I'm speed reading right now.
Heather had a chance to read this?
Yeah, I got them this morning.
Okay. So this is just a starting point. Add, subtract, edit.
Well, I mean, I like the questions, but yes, I do think there's an awful lot of them. We'll be here for a long time, so we may want to call them down to the top, but...
Right.
You know, 8, 10, something.
Our experience is that you can usually get in around 12 to 13 questions in an hour's time, leaving you know, 5 to 10 minutes for a question and answers at the end.
So if the main approach of this is to have somebody describe their experience in operating a large organization and how they've met challenges, how they've created a process out of chaos, that type of thing. That's the intent of where we're going to go with these questions.
Would it be reasonable for us to ask our consultant HR supervisor to get together and call this list down to one page, 12 questions?
Kelly?
Yeah,
I think we could do that, absolutely.
We could do that, but is there something magical about 1 hour? Is there a
No, I'm just saying that's normally the time that's chosen, so it is whether you want to have an hour, hour and a half.
Well, several of us are elected officials and have short spans of attention.
We could have coffee at the meeting.
Oh, well.
Now, I'm just asking for lack of knowledge, I guess. I've done this a couple times. Sometimes the feeling is a little less, shall we say, formal. Other times it's been very specific about asking the same exact question, having each member of the board perhaps ask that same question to each one of them so that it's read the same, so that, you know, there's no difference in the reflection of tone kind of thing. So I guess how precise in this process do we want to be?
Well, that's generally how we construct our interviews, is we'll have a preset list of questions and determine ahead of time who's going to ask what. And obviously you might have probing follow-up questions depending on what their answers are, but I think that's the safest way to do it, is to have a structure in place ahead of time.
For the first round that this would be, that's also what we normally do, is have a set of questions, determine who's going to ask them. Obviously, as Kelly said, follow-up questions, and then we suggest when you get to your top finalist, that usually is a more informal type of situation where probably you only have maybe six type of structured questions, and then it's much more of a question-answer period. I think the biggest thing for Kelly and I to know is, you know, these are the get-to-know-you questions, and that's what you want to do the first time around, but are there a couple of particular things that you want to probe, say, board relations, community relations? There's not really anything about their administrative skills too much here. Are you interested about anything in particular about budget,
experience,
what they've done as far as receiving other revenues, things of that nature?
I think ultimately we want to know those things. If they were going to come through the resume and the work that you're doing, Pam, as to what person's background is in that area. But certainly adding it to the get-to-know-you interview is another strategy, I guess.
And we do have most of that information, and most of it is contained in their resume. But sometimes people like to hear those things for themselves, certainly. So
I'm just speaking for myself. What I would like to know is that the candidate does have budget experience, multi-jurisdictional experience, ability to handle the unforeseen circumstance, has some experience with that, such as a community outbreak or something of that nature that they've been able to handle successfully.
Okay.
And whether this is a person who's really going from essentially the, you know, a staff level position to a CEO type position, or is this a CEO coming into a CEO position?
Some of that probably going to be evident from the resume.
Right. I mean, the thing that we're not pulling out of this interview is, does the candidate have a background in infectious diseases and able to make an independent call on issues versus are they going to depend on their staff, which is not a bad thing in itself. But so we're not pulling out of this get-to-know-you interview their background expertise in the science and practice of medicine.
And, right. And most of that is contained in their resumes and in my interviews with them. And obviously, you know, I have not been able to share those interviews or resumes at this point just because of the anonymity situation. So,
are you able to give us a synopsis of your conversation with the two new applicants like you did with the first two applicants at all?
Yes. The one applicant, as I said, background is both have worked in the federal government at points in their career, but one does now have county and district level experience. The other has been working in California in the correctional system and a site over two prisons, basically. That individual I don't consider to be as viable because of that. And I believe that he has dealt with infectious diseases in the military, obviously has been stationed overseas and dealing with things there. My concern, I don't have too much of a concern on the public health side as far as dealing with emergencies and outbreaks. My only concern would be that on the budget side and the administrative side, having been in those very large situations, the California state government system and the military system, you have a very different span of control over budgets. And I found him to be, his personality to be rather militaristic, is probably very into chain of command, described his management style as collaborative, but that would need to be probed further and in reference checking, because that didn't really, he came across as authoritarian. The other candidate came across as very collaborative, with very good administrative skills, a definite understanding of the funding structures of public health at the county and district level, has definitely dealt with all the public health issues that you'd be dealing with in Las Vegas, in addition to others that would not be in the position. Because sometimes in smaller jurisdictions, obviously, your span of control can be even bigger, because you have to wear even more hats, which is, I think, has done a great job building relationships with outside agencies, probably has a very good network. Doesn't appear to have much ego. I think probably works well as a team and doesn't need the spotlight. Definitely has had a lot of exposure to the media and in both emergency circumstances and in educational circumstances. and so came across as very likable and congenial. As I said, I think a very collaborative management style, and seasoned as far as public health goes, and has good experience at several different levels. Much the same as the out-of-state candidate.
Okay. So, I think Kathleen has a couple of points to make.
Well, I was just sharing with Tim that some of the highlights, okay, we might tend to agree on with regard to the absolute necessity for basic services, and that they agree what it is that they need, including the kinds of staff that are needed to ensure the basic services. Two, with regard to the thing called the public outbreak, there are certain guidelines, in addition to the, when we look at the epidemiology, that we should probably agree of what we expect from them during an outbreak situation and when we start to call the various phases or triaging in that declaration of a public outbreak. And then from the, what are their expectations of our staff expertises, which would include epidemiology, the infectious diseases, and the laboratory issues, and not just basic services. To go to somebody's point very quickly, prisons are exceptionally different when it comes to infectious diseases and transmission. And the military is very different depending upon where they have been and what capacity they've served in. And having been in sub-Saharan Africa and served with Delta and Special Forces, etc., it might be necessary to hone out what their military expertises are and how they feel about their position here in Southern Nevada. So HR has some challenges, I would say.
Agreed. And I would just say, in reflection of that, I mean, everybody's career is a point of you've had some experiences that need to springboard you to the next experience. So I don't know that we would hold it for or against anybody to have had a specific experience that doesn't bring you some background to be ready for the next experience. So that's what we want to get out of understanding and getting to meet somebody, is how flexible they are, that type of thing. So do we want to come back to the full board before taking any further action, or do we want to ask to, once Pam and Kelly have sort of re-edited these questions, to come back and start the interview process? I'm thinking out loud. I guess we do need to hear from the board in what manner and for whom do they wish to have to be the interview committee as opposed to the selection committee.
Should we meet one more time and approve the formal list of first round questions before we go to the board?
It would be fine with that.
Since the meeting two candidates that you're talking about don't have any objection to disclosure, then why don't you take a look at those resumes as well? That way, as you're moving forward, to recommend, make a recommendation to the full board, you'll have all the information available.
Should we do that at a meeting or send them independently?
I can go ahead and send the resumes and my interview notes for those two candidates who don't have a problem coming forward at this point.
And Pam, I'm not sure, is it still a fluid list? Are there still marketing irons in the fire that may not have given us results yet?
There are. I don't know that I would believe that they haven't given us results. You know, as I mentioned last time, we have done significant outreach. We did come up with a few other advertising sources. that Dr. Madaw thought might be helpful. Those haven't borne any fruit yet. And we did some more direct outreach from individuals that we were able to garner from those lists, and have not had a response to those. So while it's a fluid list, we have beat the bushes across the country, and I think most people, the needing to become licensed in Nevada situation was a hindrance in one respect, and then the other being that, you know, so many of the health districts, their health officers are not basically the chief administrative officers as well. They're not a CHO/CEO type of position. And so, obviously, as I said last time, we had an awful lot of feedback from people who said they would be very interested in the position if it didn't require the MD. So, you just have a specific set of circumstances in Nevada that are a little different than much of the country.
For those on the phone, Dr. Madaw has just joined us in the room.
Hello, sorry to be late.
Not a problem.
For those not on the phone, we fully expect the other 49 states to get in line behind us.
I will let them know.
Okay, so we should try to schedule ourselves a meeting prior to the next full board meeting, which is what date?
22nd.
F5.
So if we can do something first part of next week, would that?
Sounds about right. I've got a city council meeting Wednesday. What's your guys' schedule?
Council meeting Wednesday.
Next week. So
Tuesday could be a workable day then, you think?
Tuesday is possible. They usually keep us pretty hot in the 2 days before meeting.
Would you rather meet on Thursday? Something we have about board teleconferences on Thursday morning, but Thursday afternoon we could conceivably meet.
Yes.
I'm available Thursday morning, but not Thursday afternoon, unfortunately.
Same here.
Well, we'll just
keep
priority.
I have to kind of say I'm out of town Thursday and Friday, so
Tuesday the 16th. Is that too soon?
What we're going to expect is Pam and Kelly to re-edit the questions and prepare some resumes of the resumes that we can see. So that gives you three more working days to get that done.
Would that give us enough time to post it? A meeting on Tuesday?
Oh, yeah. Thursday, Friday, Monday, Tuesday.
You'd have to post it. What's today?
Today's
Wednesday. And this county, the other ones are closed on Friday, so we don't count that day because they can't see it. So we would have to post it today.
Can we adjourn this meeting and continue it without being out of line?
I could do Wednesday early afternoon. We could also do it by conference call, but that would be easier for everybody.
Later afternoon or
Tuesday's out.
What day are you?
Do I hear today Tuesday's out because of the opening law?
Yes. What day are you looking at, Tim?
So now, you know, on the 17th, I've agreed with SNHD to be a part of an EMS system review, which happens in the afternoon. So I think that might be over by 5 if we had a meeting at 5 p.m. Is that too late?
Well,
yeah, 6 starts council, so I mean, it can't be more than
that. Council at 6.
Yeah.
And then what's the options for the 18th? That's the council days for you guys?
No, Wednesday's the council days for us.
But you're going out of town?
Yeah, it's Nevada League of Cities and Local Government Day at the legislature. So I'm on a flight on Thursday at 10:55 and in a Nevada League of Cities meeting by 2.
any way you could shoehorn yourself in on the phone?
It depends on when you're doing it.
What could work for you?
What time do you fly Thursday?
I fly out at 10:55 in the morning.
So you could do a telephone at 8?
I could either do that or I arrive at 12:15, so anytime after, in between then and 2.
You want to sit in the airport and do it on your phone? Or?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I could do that. I would say 8 o'clock, but at 8:30 is the board, the briefing for the Board of Health. Yeah.
What about you guys on the phone?
Wednesday's fine. Thursday morning's fine. Monday and Tuesday are okay, too.
So it's at least got to happen on Wednesday, not before Wednesday.
Two. Okay, that's what it makes her feel. Okay.
It's varies between noon and 5.
Yeah, you're that.
I can do Wednesday or Thursday.
Sometimes we get a little check.
Yeah, it's been known to happen.
Did everybody say Friday is not a good meeting date?
Although on Friday I'm running all the legislature. Unless it's like late Friday. Then I can do the Wednesday.
What about Wednesday, like at 4? That's far enough before the North Las Vegas Council meeting, and we're probably going to be done by then.
Yeah, why don't we try for that? I'll see if I can move my workforce connection briefing.
Have any idea how long the EMS thing goes?
Pardon me?
Have any idea how long the EMS...
No, I'm sorry, I don't.
Well, it's right here anyway, so it's...
We could do 4:30.
You could always step out.
Are we thinking of doing Wednesday at 4?
Wednesday at 4 p.m.
Or 4:30? Even better if we could do 4:30.
Wednesday at 4:30.
In person, be a phone.
Okay.
So did we decide Wednesday at 4:30?
Wednesday at 4:30. And the agenda of that meeting will be to take a look at re-edited interview questions and also to review the two resumes that are available for public scrutiny now.
And then make a recommendation to the board.
Right. And Pam, do you think before then you would have any further discussion and with the candidates wishing to do this no-name process, and Annette may get something from the AG as well?
Yes, I'm planning to touch bases with them just to let them know about our call today and where we are. And I will touch base with them to see if they would be comfortable in me providing redacted resumes to you.
All right. And so then we'll have a little bit more meat to give to the full board for the following month.
Yes.
Is this by phone?
You can do by phone or by person.
Yeah.
Either way.
Will it be here?
Yep.
Okay.
This room, I assume, unless this is where the EMS thing is. Who knows? Let's show up here and somebody will tell you where to go.
If it's not here, we'll definitely have signs posted.
Okay, moving on. Anything else for agenda items with discussion of recruitment options? That said, we'll move on to item 5, which is public comment. Another person from the public. I don't know if Dr. Madala has any wisdom to bestow on us as we're going through our process here.
Well, I'm sorry to come late, and I'm also sorry that I haven't been part of this on an ongoing basis, but one thing that I saw earlier was the proposed list of interview questions, and I just whipped together a whole list of the kind of questions I would ask hiring a CHO, or that you should ask me. And they're all technical. They're all, I mean, what's the formal training in public health preventive medicine? What's the past work experience in the management of a public health agency? Tell us about your past technical experience and training, grant acquisition and management. How many grants have you been awarded as the principal investigator? What's the amount of funding? What project periods? How many technical reports and publications arose as a result of the grants? How many papers have you published in the peer-reviewed literature? How much was that original research, policy papers, or review papers? What's been your experience in leading disease outbreak investigations? And that's broken out to infectious disease, environmental exposures, injury investigations, chronic disease, and maternal child health. What experience in developing public health policy and issues? What's your experience in developing and managing surveillance systems? What's been your past experience managing epidemiology programs? And what level of credentials have your staff had? What about the number of staff? What kind of different surveillance systems you've been responsible for and worked with? What's been your past experience in managing and leading information technology systems personnel and their applications? What's been your experience in developing and managing budgets, the size of the budgets, the number of staff and their credentials? What's been your experience in developing legislation and testifying in front of legislators? What formal training and experience you had in human resources? I mean, it's a whole bunch of those technical questions that really determine what you're going to get in a successor. And I think that the general kind of questions I saw are also very important, but you have to be able to pin people down in terms of their past technical expertise in this field. And so I'd be happy to, I just threw these together just for this meeting, but I'd be happy to work on this to try to provide those to you. And the other thing is, I'm also working to try to look at two things. One is the identification of other potentially qualified candidates for your consideration, but the other one is options so that you don't feel trapped to make a decision if you don't feel comfortable you've had enough options. I mean, there's no reason, for example, why you couldn't ask Dr. Coleman to be an acting CHO for a specified period of time while you extend the recruitment period. I think that what you have to be able to decide, and I'm not saying that you shouldn't hire Dr. Coleman. I mean, he meets a lot of these qualifications. But I'm saying when you only have a handful of people or maybe one or two, you might decide that you want to have more time and cast a broader net to see if you can attract additional candidates. And I think up till now, from what I've seen, some of our recruitment efforts have not actually targeted some of the professional meetings and societies where you're going to find the kind of people who have these credentials and experience. So it's just something I very much care about the future of the district, and I really hope that you will end up with the person that you most want and feel comfortable with to be the next leader as the CHO. But I think that there are options you have, if you choose to exercise them, that could buy you a little more time and potentially offer you an option to consider additional people, so that if you select Dr. Coleman, you'll be confident that you really did have an array of talent upon which you could then choose and choose wisely about who should step up to the plate. But I really would caution that you shouldn't allow yourselves to be forced into make a decision if you're not really comfortable that you're getting what you want.
Well, two things, I guess. Those questions that you prepared, which are more technical and science and practice of public health, I think are obviously what we were hoping in discussion with Pam that we're going to come through that. Review process as she was scouting candidates, but we'd like to hear it directly ourselves at some point in time, versus the questions that we looked at today, which were, again, the softball, get-to-know-you kind of question.
Sure, I understand.
But I think, obviously, we need both qualities of questions at some point in time.
Would it make sense to have, I'm just saying, the technical aspect starts to get into needing more technical you the answers. You know, you have to have a certain level of technical literacy to understand much less the questions that Dr. Madai just rattled off. The potential answers that the questions brought. I'm wondering if it makes sense to have a technical questionnaire on paper. district and others as well.
It's a good idea. I don't know how tedious that would be for the candidates to want to spend time writing it versus telling us. But
put a severe criminal words they can respond with.
Well, we use supplemental questionnaires all the time in recruitments, and for a recruitment at this level, I would think someone would be willing to put in the time that it would take to adequately answer these questions. And if they aren't willing to, then do we really want
that? That's why I took these notes and gave them to Tim, because there are highly...
Yeah, it's the same direction you were going.
Exactly. Yeah. In fact, that's why I wrote them down bullet for bullet. It's almost like I was giving a mini course or something. But there are exceptional differences depending upon these backgrounds, okay? And I wasn't kidding about the military, and I wasn't kidding about
I'm sure.
Exceptionally...
In quarantine, it's got to be a lot easier in prison.
But so... I guess to Dr. Madaw's suggestions, okay, that's what Tim and I were discussing anyway, that maybe that would be very worthwhile.
Well, maybe then we could ask our contract and staff to bring us back a particularly based on the questions you had and Dr. Madaw's questions to come back with a proposed technical supplemental, what did you call it? Supplemental questionnaire.
Well, and maybe that's part of, if I may expand on what you're saying, maybe that's part of how we do this, because, you know, we've got these two applicants that don't want their name released, but if they're willing to at least do a questionnaire, maybe the review of that will help us determine whether these are two people that we really want to have come in and interview. So maybe
their name doesn't have to be on that questionnaire.
As a matter of fact, when we do the supplemental questionnaires, we redact all of the personal information, and we have subject matter experts review their answers. To
that
the
might be more effective than which of your elementary school teachers was your favorite.
So I realize we're now in public comment and this is not the best time to do it, but you technically haven't adjourned, so perhaps we can get Pam and, I'm sorry, Kelly, to continue with the assignment that they were initially given, but in the interim maybe work on this supplemental questionnaire.
Yeah, because it almost seems like we're trying to get at two different things here. What Dr. Madaw has is the technical aspect of the person, and these other get-to-know-you questions I think are important too, but these might be, if they can satisfy the technical, then you might move to these as we go through the process. Because I think it's also important that you find the right fit in terms of management style and some of these things that Pam were relaying about these other two candidates, I find scary.
Well, and management style is certainly important, but it's not going to matter to us if they can't.
Exactly.
If they can't
they
get through
that
and give us decent answers in answer to Dr. Madaw's very specific technical questions, then, if they can't pass that, I don't care what their style is.
It's kind of like any other recruitment where we might do a written test up front to narrow our candidate pool to those that we feel meet the knowledge and skill abilities to do the job, and then they move to the interview process where we might ask these types of questions.
Exactly. So Mr. Chairman,
focus a second.
My question would be, is this something that we as the interviewer, so the succession committee can, or is this something that we need to suggest to the full board?
I was going to kind of suggest along the same line, given that thought, is it critical that we meet really before our meeting to professional questions that might be put together by Dr. Madaw, Kelly, and Pam, or just to announce to the board that we're working on that process. So we don't,
you could just announce to the board that you're working on that process.
So I don't know that it's critical that we have a meeting next week. Bob has thought on that.
Well, in the interim, Mr. Chair, is it your recommendation that they work on putting together this questionnaire?
I do. I would like to see you do both parts, though. I'd like to see you do the get-to-know-you questions as well as the technical professional questions. And we can report to the board that that's the direction that we're completing now.
And that we recommend that we do the questionnaire first and then...
followed by the get-to-know-you questions once we see that they have the technical expertise to meet our need.
The technical questions would be in a supplemental questionnaire format, and the get-to-know-you questions would be in a face-to-face interview format. Okay.
And I would, just thinking out loud, I suppose at the point in time of a oral interview, if we had those technical responses, they could be a point of discussion as well, if somebody wanted to dig a little deeper into that. So maybe...
How long do you think it would take after we sent the supplemental questionnaires out for schedule?
We usually give people a week, since these are a little more in depth than our normal supplemental questions.
If we met, approved a technical supplemental questionnaire, and authorized its conveyance to the recipients, we'd be able to report to the board at the board meeting that we expect to shortly receive the responses back. Or can we instruct staff and everyone to just put the technical questions together under Dr. Bada's supervision and send them out to the candidates?
How many questions are you anticipating?
It sounded like 15 on his list, and that might be...
I believe that is, that list is a little too exhaustive for a supplemental questionnaire. Even giving the candidates a week, there's a lot of that information you will be able to garner from their resumes, and I think that if we could compile maybe 6 questions, and I'm sure that Dr. Mada can help Kelly and I come up with what he believes to be the most pertinent things. And because I think 15 is, you're talking about people who are incredibly busy and running. I'm sorry, I'm getting a lot of feedback.
This is Mary Beth. I connected just a minute ago, and I'm out of my head.
Okay.
I'll just mute myself.
Going back to what we were talking about and why I started making the lists almost like bullet items, okay, is exactly what Dr. Mada has put down, and he could perhaps triage it a little bit to cut down the number of questions.
And some of those questions, I'll bet a technical analyst looking at the resumes would be able to give the answer to some of those questions.
I agree.
Some of those questions are a little more sophisticated and drilled down.
But what's nice about your list, and I agree with you entirely, is that this could be triaged and essentially
shortened,
yes, but that he hit all the elements of what it is we absolutely have to have here. And so if we could have someone do, like you suggested, and maybe make the first cut, okay, to, you know, lessen the burden, and then make sure that we include Dr. Mada's elements, okay, of this program effort, then we will have completed at least our first step. But I don't think anything that he said is non-trivial.
Yeah, the question is whether some of it can be derived, whether some of it is big enough, you know, and obvious enough that you can tell from the resume what the answer is.
I agree entirely. And
some
I think
of it's more subtle
that,
customized to us, really.
Well, and I like the fact, as an elected, I mean, truthfully, somebody can answer your questions, Dr. Mada, and I wouldn't know whether they were giving me a line or not. This is not my area of expertise. So the idea that they could write it down, that we would have some technical people reviewing those answers who have that specialty and that knowledge, certainly makes me feel better that when that report comes back as to how well they did in answering those questions, that I know that someone with some technical expertise reviewed them who isn't going to buy the fluff and who's going to know what's real and what's not, and make a very strong recommendation to the board and certainly to the electeds on the board who have a great deal of commitment to this board, but perhaps not enough expertise to answer those. So.
And not to complicate things, but you have an additional resources. I mean, there are states persons in the United States who have impeccable reputations and are disinterested, who you could ask to volunteer to do a technical review of your last, say, two candidates or three candidates. And I'm thinking
Aaron
of people
Caden,
like Jonathan Fielding, who was the retiring longtime county health officer of Los Angeles, and Dr. David Fleming, who's currently the head of the health department for Seattle King County. And they don't have any dog in our fight,
right,
but they are highly respected people in the world of public health and epidemiology, and they could be asked, would they be willing to assist
right.
the board in doing a final last candidate review and making a recommendation, or even just making a recommendation would be, hey, you got two outstanding or three outstanding
right.
people and you can't go wrong with any of them,
right.
as opposed to, wait a minute, we know that this particular person may have a cloud in the past, you might want to avoid that person. I've never hired anybody at the physician level that I haven't done that. It's gone out and checked
right.
in my whole career with colleagues who I know, who I talk to specifically to help me understand, you know, some of the final nuances about that. And generally not to say who should I hire, but
to give you an evaluation of how
exactly.
strong the answers are.
Exactly.
These two did
yes.
maybe a little better and stronger in the answers than this applicant did.
Can you think of any other outgoing CMOs of large districts who might be appropriate to join that committee?
Well, I think we leave that to Dr. Dodd to help us put together. I'm sure he seems to know who the people of contact are.
Pardon me, this is Pam. Dr. Fleming is currently one of my clients, so I have a current relationship with him and would be happy to connect with him on that level for you as well.
Okay. So you're talking about a final recommendation. When we receive the supplements back, a first step is we have to decide who's going to review the supplements. Are you suggesting these people for that step as well? Or?
Potentially. I'm just saying that, again, depending on the candidates that ultimately you have,
I think we want to go through a process with the board and the committee, and then when we get a list of finalists, that's when we want to enroll.
And the review of the CVs is very, as you said, very illuminating. A lot of the information you can pick off of that. But when you're really starting to try to find out exactly what you're dealing
yeah.
with, there really is no substitute for trying to get knowledge from people who have worked with these people and really know who
but
they
since
are.
You have two candidates who do not necessarily want to release their name, they would get the CV, but they would get a redacted.
Right, but at the end of the day, if you're seriously considering offering one of them the job, at some point they've got to lay
yeah.
it all out.
Yeah.
At that point, they would have to agree to.
So just the mechanics of what we're talking about, I think, you know, we've given to Pam and Kelly the get-to-know-you questions. Dr. Madal has prepared the technical questions. I don't know that this subcommittee is going to bring any more expertise to those technical questions, so if we leave it to Kelly, Dr. Madal, and Pam to
take the technical yep. question list and figure out which half can be most easily answered off the CV. The other half, which is going to be a little more detailed and customized to this health district, is the technical questionnaire that we would probably want to send out. And then the get-to-know-you questions boil down to 12 instead of 36. So,
20, I think, on the
20.
12 is the way to go. I agree.
They're going to be compiled
to look at.
Do we need to do anything before the technical questionnaires are sent out to the four?
My thought is no. We have the expertise of Dr. Madal and Pam knowing what's on resumes, and I think we could leave it to you guys as a group to
mm-hmm.
carry that.
Well, we need to know who's going to review the completed supplements.
This
right.
This we'll start with this committee and ask Dr. Madonna to participate.
And you're a technical expert.
And then from there we can make a decision to continue with some or all of them, and then get on to the third party disinterested review. But we may take one or two of them out of there.
Right.
And that first step is hypercritical. And so I think you're correct in that order of events. And it should not be that difficult.
It's probably just a...
Just one thing, if it does come to the committee, we're not subject to the open meeting law, or are we?
We are.
Even though we don't have a quorum, we are a subset of the board.
We are open meeting law for that process, I believe. But right now, as those supplemental questionnaires come back, names could be redacted, and when you guys create the questions, you know, I don't know how you can pose them so that people are not having to give away their community or something of that nature to answer the question. But that would be the intent.
Pam, you would have the legend for if we get all four supplemental questionnaires back, you would have the legend that would let us that so you would be able to identify which questionnaire went with which candidate. We wouldn't know that.
Yes. Correct.
So even though that supplemental questionnaire would have to be made public because we are a public body,
we can still get that far.
Right.
Legally.
Right.
Exactly.
So I think that said, the question is, do we or do we not need to meet next Wednesday? It sounds to me like maybe we do not need to meet next Wednesday.
From what I get from the discussion, our direction is to call down the get-to-know-you questions, to develop the technical questionnaire, send it out, and get the responses back.
Correct.
And our expectation would be that the the supplemental questionnaire would be returned to us within 7 to 10
Pam, what do you think for the supplemental questionnaire would be a reasonable amount of time for these candidates?
I think we need to give them 10 days.
Business days? Calendar days?
10.
I would say 10 calendar days.
All right.
So then you would be able to report back to the board that these are the steps that you're taking, and by the next meeting, you should be able to give them some recommendations.
That would be our intent. I agree with that. So I don't know if that was a motion previously to take the actions we were going to take, but a new motion would be to take these new actions. The motion would include setting the supplemental questions, setting the get-to-know-you questions, and reporting back to the board after this April meeting with the results of supplemental questionnaire.
Including conveying the supplemental technical questionnaire to the candidates.
We will meet as a subcommittee one more time between the April and the May meetings.
Right, at least.
And then also asking Dr. Mada and Pam and Kelly to put together a technical review committee, basically, so that when we have the responses, we know who are going to be reviewing them.
And then the work product, will you be sending your work product out to this committee of the technical questions?
Oh, I'll work with Kelly and
Kelly, let's do
hearing the discussion. Change. I just whipped these out because I wanted give you an idea of some of the things.
I appreciate that very much.
That's very elemental in this whole thing. So wouldn't you like to see that list?
I think we just agreed to send it out to the committee.
Okay.
So moved.
Second.
Any more discussion for that complicated process? All in favor, aye.
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 And
is Rob still?
Aye.
Are you still with us, Rob?
Are you with us, Mary Beth?
Yeah, I was going to say Commissioner
Scott. I am here. I vote yay.
Okay. So I want to make sure we still here.
We got a quarters for it. All right, so we actually took care of that as part of reaching back from public comments. That said, no more public comment.
Wow.
Rod, here.
For a motion to adjourn, or do
we? I think we need a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
And we are adjourned. Thank you.